Hello, everybody. This is Jose from The Jose Show. This episode that you're going to be listening to is actor James Poole. The episode sounds a little bit grainy and there may be some background noise, but I'm going to put it through Magic Mastering and hopefully that clears it up some. I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode.
This is the Jose Show. Jose Show. Jose
Show. And welcome to another exciting episode of the Jose Show. I am your host, Jose Roldan Jr., and tonight's very special guest. He just finished filming on a movie called Zombies with Bees, and he's currently filming Interfere, the next wave that's being filmed in Mississippi, and the director on that film is Tim Wall. I'd like to introduce to you actor James Poole. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Very good. Thank you, Jose. It's good to see you and good to talk to you. We've been chatting online now for weeks and weeks and weeks, it seems. It's the first that we've actually spoken, and you can talk back, and I can talk.
I know, right? Yeah, it has been a couple of weeks. And to let everybody know how I found James, I have never met Tim Wall, but we've been talking back and forth, and I was supposed to interview him, but there was a family issue that he had, and I ended up interviewing Hunter Bickham, and that's how me and Tim started talking. And I saw his first movie, Interfere, and it was streaming on Amazon, and I'm saying and too much, and it was really pretty good. I really enjoyed it, and then I was excited when he started talking about Interfere, the next wave, which is coming out probably next year because they're currently filming it. And every time they would a new actor would come into play, he would post it on their Facebook page, and he would say, this actor just joined, and this actor or this actress just joined. And that's how I found James, and then I sent him a message and asked him if he would like to be on the show, and that's probably been about a month ago. Yeah. About a month. It's just because I'm so booked up, believe it or not. I've got, after this interview, I think I have like six more. It doesn't sound like a lot, but trying to set up time, scheduling, and then editing it. Sometimes one episode can take 3 or 4 hours. And, you know, even writing notes and doing some reading bios or anything I can find. But I'm glad to have you on, and it's nice to put a face because, like you said, we've been chatting back and forth with texting. And so I finally get to see you. You get to see me.
And I get to see you, yes. And thank you for the opportunity. I really do. And we were chatting just before we went live, and I've looked at some of the other podcasts, and you put a lot of work into this. That's impressive. You really do. I make the effort.
I try. You know, I don't want to do something, I'm not going to say the term half ASS, because it reflects on me. You know, and When I do interviews and when I interview celebrities or actors or whatever, I can't watch everything they have. Some celebrities have tons of movies, some has a few. So I can't watch everything. So I try to watch a few and, you know, to see how they act in the film or in the scene that they're in. And, you know, so it does take time. Now one of the questions I have, how did you get the acting bug?
Oh, gee. You know, it's such a left-handed story, and I really have to go back before I started acting. I spent a few years in radio up in Shreveport. I was working for a big radio station. They're selling advertising for two radio stations, and I've always had this voice. And somebody said, you know, I want you to come in and read a few lines and see if you can't do some production. And I did. And they said, you need some work. And I said, no, I'd really kind of like to try my hand at being on the air. And they're like, yeah, you never have. And we really don't want to move you out of sales. And, I said, well, so what do I got to do to change your mind? So they gave me a few things to do. And I worked really hard for a lot of weeks and I guess months. And one day I went back into to see the program director and said, I want to take another shot at it. So he had me do some readings and he said, okay, I'm going to put you in a control room on the weekend when nobody's listening.
Oh, wow.
And so I kind of had the bug from then. I worked in sales, Monday through Friday, and then worked a double shift on the air on Saturday and usually on Sunday, and then came back to do sales on Monday. So I had the bug bad then. Well, life went on, and I got out of radio, and I spent a number of years in advertising. Actually, I had a client. I owned an advertising agency here in Pensacola for about 10 years, and had a client that had a television show that it was about trucking. And I did a few things on the air for him. His wife was a director at one of the local community theaters. And she said, you should come and audition for a show that I'm doing. And I said, I've never done, that. I've been on the radio. I've been on, a little bit. I don't know about that. She said, well, I double dog dare you, come audition for this. And the show was Inherit the Wind. And the part that she wanted me to read for was Brubaker, the kind of smart aleck newspaper reporter. And so she gave me, some lines, and I went home and really worked hard on it, and went to the audition and did pretty well. Well, I did not get the part.
You got the part.
Did not give me the part. She gave me, third townsman on the left, and I think I had a couple of lines, but the next audition that I had there at the theater was a show called The Little Fox, Lillian Hellman, a staple of community theater. Well, I got the lead for that.
And congratulations.
As Uncle Ben Hubbard, who was a very southern gentleman, set in the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. And I had to find that because I don't sound like I'm from anywhere. And when I do a southern accent, it sounds like a cross between Clark Gable and Foghorn Leghorn, but that's what they wanted. So that was, 17 years on stage in every role that you can imagine. And so I started making the transition into television and film 7 or 8 years ago. And I've done some stuff, nothing major, super major, but done some stuff. And it's a joy. It's just a joy to do.
That's amazing, though, that you were in the radio. And I've always liked the radio, and I wanted to go into it, but I didn't feel like doing the 4-year communications degree. And, that's the magic of the internet. Now I can basically be my own little radio station or whatever you want to call it, as a podcaster. And, oh man, bad timing for the train to go by. I literally live 100 feet from the train.
I hear it.
That's hard to edit out. So for those of you that hear the train, that's not a sound effect. That is a real train. But anyway, I've always wanted to be on the radio. I've had people tell me that I do have kind of a radio voice. The only voice that I can do, as far as I can't do like southern voices. I guess I could if I tried, but I can do Bill Clinton pretty good. You know what I'm saying? I was in the White House for 2 terms, and that's right. And say hi to Monica for me. Hopefully I don't get in trouble for using his voice on the radio. But this is not Bill Clinton. There we go. That's what we call it. So that's about all I can do.
That's pretty good.
And that's cool that you were on stage. I never really did.
That's pretty good.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I've never really did stage. I used to do some plays in school and stuff like that. The biggest thing that I've ever done years ago, when I was at this one church up in Dade City, they wanted people to be in this one play. And me and my big mouth said, hey, I'd be in it. And then after I got the part, I started reading, the lines. And when you do a play, you got to basically remember everything, even if it's a 30 or 40 minute play. And I refused to do it. I couldn't do it. I just didn't have the time to memorize lines. So what they ended up doing for everybody, we had like a screen in the back, and they put everybody's lines. So when it was my turn to speak, I got up there and I had the screen in the back, and just the way I looked, I glanced and, I moved my arms the way I was supposed to. And everybody came up to me after the play, and they said, man, you did a good job. I said, thank you. They said, how did you remember all those lines? I said, I had the screen in front of me that I could see that you couldn't, I mean, it's kind of cheating, but it, trust me, it was a lot of lines, and I just wasn't, if I was younger, I'm almost 50, and man, it's hard to remember things anymore. It's like, good Lord. But that's cool that you had a lot of experience. Now, when you did your first audition for film, what was your first audition like?
And I'm trying to remember what, I think it was,
Was it a Wandering Mind in the God Machine?
I don't even think, I really don't think I auditioned for that. I think I responded to a notice and they said, yeah, come on. I was the right age. I've never seen that film. It was a student film. I've never even seen that.
Well, then what the next film you were in was the Ardenis Fury?
Ardenis, the Peasant Fury. Yeah, yeah.
That's done by Asylum. So what was it like interviewing for that part?
So that was done here locally. That the Ardenis Fury was produced by a company associated with the Asylum.
Yes.
The producers of the Sharknado franchise.
Love Sharknado.
And they held auditions at a hotel out in North Pensacola. And my role, one of the roles that I read for was it was like a duck and run, and you were under fire. And Ardenis Fury, it's for those who don't know, it's a World War II story. And the casting director said, "Okay, I'm gonna go bang, bang, bang." And you react. And she went bang, bang, bang. And I grabbed a table that was in front of me that had a lot of papers on it and turned it, upside down and ducked down behind the table, so that you could only see a little bald head. and that was my audition for that. I did not get that role. I wonder why. But it was all about, well, we're going to give you, not all the information that you might want or need. We're going to see what kind of choices you make. That's kind of the difference between a film and stage acting is, you have to make choices in both, certainly, but you may have, opportunity to make an improv choice on camera, but that's what they were mm-hmm. looking to see how I would react. Well, that's what I did. I used the space around me, and I gave them something that they didn't expect. So they gave me the part that they did offer me, and I took was of a French peasant. The scene when I read the script, oddly, I came in at the bottom of page 23 and at the top of page 24, they shoot me in the head.
Bang.
But the thing about the scene was, I'm being manhandled by a German soldier, I'm thrown to the ground and there's a gun in my head. And that is the entrance for the evil Nazi villa. And it's kind of akin to that scene in Star Wars where Darth Vader first marches down the off the space ship. And, there's this evil guy. And Tino Struckman, who is a terrific actor, and he's Belgian.
Really? Oh, wow.
But,
that's cool.
And he, part of what he does, he has all of the German, authentic German uniforms. And when they need a reenactment or somebody that really knows what they're doing in that vein, costume and accents and language, they go to Tino Struckman.
That's cool.
And so he marches in and has threatens me, of course, And then when I hesitate, he marches my wife and children in front of me. I'm giving the story away. and shoots them, and shoots them, and then and then shoots me in the head because I won't tell him what he wants to know. The funny thing is that I think I'm 6 foot two, and I think Tino is maybe 5 foot six, 5 foot seven.
Yeah, so they couldn't have you towering over him.
Yeah, so they had to make sure that I was on my knees when he comes through the door. And Tino is a former bodybuilder. So the joke is that his pec, when he walks in a room, his pecs get there, a minute or two before the rest of it. This great, just a super actor. He's done so many things, and I learned so much from him, just watching him and listening to him. And one of the first things he ever said to me when we were rehearsing was, he looked at me and he said, Oh, we're going to have fun. You're a stage actor. I said, how did you know? And he said, I can hear. I can hear the voice. So, yeah. So it was a lot of fun. But, you know, but the big thing there was that this was, and I guess Three-Headed Shark Attack was done after that. But the Asylum decided to bring this this production to Northwest Florida. That's been years ago. And it was actually, it wasn't shot in Pensacola. It was shot at a large farm north of Crestview, which is 40 miles to the east. And then this farm is 20 or 25 miles to the north. It's, you know, right at the Florida-Alabama line. And the owner of this farm is a collector of World War II artifacts. And so he had uniforms and medals. They also had rifles. He had tanks. He had aircraft. He had, you know, deuce and a half. That when I first rolled up to the set, there was some guys crawling around, some mechanics crawling around a tank, a Sherman tank, and I walked over and said, "What are you guys doing?" And they said, "Well, we gotta replace this or we gotta replace that. Can't get it anymore, so we gotta go down and make it." And, okay,
wow, right. That's pretty cool.
And a little while later, you know, I heard this, you know, they had it work, you know, and it ran around. Yeah.
Wow, that is pretty neat. And with that, we're going to go ahead and take a commercial. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turfs Up Radio.
You're listening to Turfs Up Radio, the only radio station of its kind dedicated to the green industry. Now you can even ask Alexa to tune you in when you're home.
And welcome back. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turfs Up Radio. Tonight, we're talking with actor James Poole. That is actually pretty cool, talking about that movie. And this guy had all these old tanks and rifles. And man, so I bet you he was like a kid in a candy store when they used all that stuff in the film.
Oh, he was. He was. He was just beside himself. And, you know, it made sense. Somebody told me, you know, it was cheaper to bring the production crew to the tanks than it was to bring the tanks to the production crew in California.
Makes
so
sense.
It took a concerted effort from some people. I was not one of them, but it took a concerted effort to convince them to come down here. And once they knew where we were, well, you know, now we're available.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Man. Okay, so now you just finished filming Zombies, which was filmed in Florida as well. So what was it like being on that set, or are you allowed to even talk about it yet? Because I know it's in post-production.
It is. They have some editing to do and some other effects to add in, so I'm not sure how much I can say.
That's fine.
The clips that I have seen, kind of like for Interfere, the clips that I've seen looked very theatrical, you know, so I think they're going to come out with whatever that is. I think they're going to come out with a pretty high quality product. The director is also the writer and producer, a young lady named Eliza Marie. And this is her first attempt at doing that. She's been an actress locally, and she's a model. I don't know. I'm going to say she's in her 20s. And she works in graphic arts, I believe, or has. So this was kind of her first attempt. She wrote the story and sent it to a local producer, Nick Smith. Mm-hmm. It was a local producer, and kind of offhandedly said, "Hey, let's get together, you know, sometime and do this film." And Nick said, read the script, and said, "How about we start, you know, like in 2 weeks?" So she was floored. So she was behind the eight ball, but she put everything that she needed to put together. She did it herself, and there were a few hiccups, but she learned from that. And like I say, in the end, even though she will be a first time a film producer, I think she's going to have a first rate product, and I'm looking forward to, you know, to seeing that. It was a lot of local people, so it was a very collegiate atmosphere. We all knew each other. Some of us had worked with each other. So for those of you who are not actors, you know, trust is the big thing, whether you're on stage or on set.
Yes,
you know,
I agree.
Trust, you learn to trust the other actors and as well as the director. And we already had that in large part. And when we filmed my scene was on a farm out in Chamukla, north of Milton, way out 40 miles in San Rosa County. And very pastoral, very picturesque, but it lies right in the flight path for Whiting Field, which is where the Navy does a lot of their training.
And oh, that is pretty cool.
So there for a while, it was like every 30 seconds, there was an airplane that, you know, they were like, hold for the Navy, you know, and then you'd get a couple lines of, hold for the Navy, you know, hold for an airplane, you know. So that got to be funny. That actually caused us to lose some time. We had to come back and finish a scene for that because of that reason. It was a cool set, and there were cows and, you know, chickens.
Chickens,
it was a real working farm.
I think it's going to be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I reached out to the director, and she's supposed to be on, I believe, the last week of this month. And so, you know, we'll get more information. But I can't wait to see this because I like zombies and I like honeybees. I think honeybees are very interesting creatures. I can be in the midst of honeybees and not worry about getting stung. But like today at work, I must have killed 500 wasps, and I was scared to death. We had a bunch of wasp nests that I had to get rid of at work. And man, I'm sitting there with a broom and everything and trying to swat them. And so I'm looking forward to this, to seeing how it's going to go together. And so that's pretty cool. Now, the next film that you're going to be in is called Interfere, The Next Wave. And that's directed by Tim Wall. And I want to say the city, right? Pascagoula. I think that's what it's called. Mississippi.
That's correct.
Pastor, yeah, I got it right. I was practicing that today. And so I'm looking forward to that. The very first one, the first movie, Interfere, was really cool. I mean, I really liked how they, for a low budget film, man, it was really well put together. The actors did an excellent job. And so I can't wait to this. I know it's going to be probably next year before it comes out, but I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully they can do a third film in the series, do a trilogy. So now, how did you come across that film to be in it?
Well, again, it was not really an audition. One of the other major players in that film is an actor, Jeremy London, and he is also one of my act coaches. And I got a message on Facebook from him saying, "Hey, I'm involved in a film over here, and they need somebody to do this. And I thought of you. Are you interested?" And because it was Jeremy London, I said, "Tell me when and where, and I'll be there." And it was actually almost a week, better part of a week of filming. And we filmed mostly at night at a location north of Pascagoula in a place called Big Ben. There's another town, a small town. It's close to Lucidale, and I can't remember. Anyway, again, a very pastoral setting. It was a horse farm and long, rolling green hills and horses, you know, and even a donkey ranch off to the side. We didn't see any of that because we were filming at night. And Tim had found and located a house that was vacant and that fit the needs for the story and for my part. So we actually Hunter and Tim Tim owns a television station there in Pascagoula, a local.
Yes.
Station. So they were doing television stuff during the day. And then at night we would run out. And the first night we started at about 6 o'clock, and we didn't wrap that night until 3 o'clock. So it was, you know, it was a long night.
Wow. And that is a long night.
The other filming nights were not quite that long, but, you know, but very often we would get out there at 5 o'clock and wrap at 12:30. It was a lot of work. It was just a lot of work, and some terrific actors. Jeremy London, Ryan's going to kill me. I can't remember his last name, but he's one of the villains. Marcus Dupree and Chase Waters. You know, if you're into music and along the Gulf Coast, you know the name Chase Waters. And it's just, it's going to be, again, I've seen some of the clips, and it looks very theatrical, and I'm really excited. I'm really proud to be a part of that film. You know, that as well as Zombies are, you know, those are two really good examples of real live, true, independent filmmaking.
Yes, and, I agree.
And you know, I mean, it's great to have a huge budget, but you know, you don't always have that, and so you have to get really creative. And the thing about Interfere writing back with Tim and Hunter was a real trip after we had wrapped, because you know they were still talking about, you know, different shots and different setups for the next day, and you know how they could do this and put this in like this way, and you know, and it was like, and it was just nonstop, and it was, you know, and I realized at one point this is these guys' passion, you know, it's a real passion, and that's what independent filmmaking really is. It's a passion for people.
I agree, it is. You know, like I said, the first one was just well put together, so I guarantee this one's going to be well put together and then some. But that's pretty cool that I know it's got to be a long day when you're filming from 6 to 3, and that is just crazy. I know one time I was on the set of Edward Scissorhands, and just watching them set one scene up, it would take a couple of hours to set it up, and then it was in the movie for like seconds, and then it would tear down and get ready for the next scene. So I can understand, you know, seeing filmmaking and seeing how it's done. Now, I do know they had that Hurricane Ida come through, and from what I've seen, I think they've stopped production for a couple of weeks because they had to do some other stuff with, I think, the football team or whatever in that area, but then they're going to resume production in a couple of weeks. So I'm glad that everybody's safe up there, and I know a lot of people were flooded out, and I know I checked in on you, and you were doing fine, so that's a good thing. I hate to see anybody.
We were just out of the strike. So.
Yeah, I mean, we've had them here before in Central Florida, and I know a couple of years ago we were without power for a week. So hurricanes can be really nasty, and you know, I hate to see that people lose their homes, their lives. But wow, that is just.
Even last year, last September, Sally, which hit on the anniversary of Hurricane Ivan, Sally was just a Category 1. But we were without power here for 4 or 5 days. And I think after Ivan, we were without power for a full two weeks.
That's crazy. And I have sleep apnea, so great. I definitely got to have the power. And we're going to go ahead and take our second commercial break. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turf's Up Radio.
Hey, pay bills.
I know, right? Here we go.
Attention all veterans. Have you heard about Turf's Up Radio's Jobs for Vets program? If you are looking for a job and you're interested in working in the landscape and snow removal profession, there just might be a company in your local area that is looking to hire. All you have to do is send us your resume at jobsforvets@turfsupradio.com. That's jobsforvets@turfsupradio.com. Turf's Up Radio, your industry, your station.
And welcome back. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turf's Up Radio. And tonight we're talking with actor James Poole. And so I have a few more questions I want to ask you. When you're not acting, what do you do for a hobby? My hobby, I used to collect autographs and meet actors.
Gee, a hobby?
Yeah.
Well, I have in the past, I was an avid sailor for quite a while. I no longer have a boat, but I had a sailboat for a number of years. I was very active in the bicycling community here, and rode 100-mile rides. I participated in, there used to be a thing called the NS150, which was a fundraiser for multiple sclerosis.
Oh, that's cool.
And you would raise money and then go out and ride 150 miles. That was just pure fun, all it was. And then in my younger years, I scuba dived mostly during college. For quite a while, and had several advanced certifications. It's been a while since I've been in the water in that way. I work out. I work in my yard. Sugar's back there. You can see Sugar, right?
Sugar. She's like, Dad, when are you going to get done?
she will hear me talking to people, and I'm not talking to her. She'll get jealous. She'll come over and, you know, jump up.
We don't have too much longer, Sugar, I promise you. You know, it's funny when you were talking about riding a bike. I remember years ago, when I used to be with the Royal Rangers, which is a like a Christian Boy Scouts. So we went to this wilderness park not too far from where I live now, and we were taking the boys out to ride, and I was one of the commanders, and we were doing 7 laps, and it's not like, you know, 5 minutes and you're done. These were pretty long laps. So after about 3 laps, I took a rest, and there was another gentleman, you know, he was probably 30 or 40 years older than me at the time. And I just went, I just finished my 3rd lap. And he's like, I just finished my 72nd lap. And I was like, this is what I was like. Crickets. And I'm like, okay. He goes, yeah, and I've been to the Tour de France and this bicycle competition. I'm like, okay, goodbye. I'm gone. Like, he shut me down.
there was a, I'm sure they still do it, but there was a ride in Texas called the Hotter Than Hell 100. and it was 100 miles through Texas. And I think they did it in July or August. And it was like all of these people would go out to this thing, and only a small fraction, you know, like 10% would actually finish the ride.
They wouldn't catch me doing it because I can barely ride 10 feet and I got a bike.
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't. I never did that then. Certainly wouldn't do it.
So now let me ask you this. What do you have in the works for your next acting gig? Do you have anything coming up? Any auditions or?
I just submitted an audition. I can't tell you anything about that. I'm waiting for this pandemic stuff to get out of the way. A year ago in April, I actually had 3 films booked. And then the pandemic hit and all 3 of them, you know, got shut down. Wow. And, one of them may get put back together, but I don't think the other 2, will come back. So I, you know, right now I'm scouring the websites. I'm staying in touch with, I have 3 agents that cover me from, one in New Orleans, one in Atlanta, and one in South Florida and Orlando. So I'm staying in touch with them. And I'm practicing a lot. I've got a studio set up in my house to do self-taped videos, auditions mainly. You know, every 2-3 or 4 times a week, I'll do something so that you stay sharp. And, we were talking about memorizing lines and all of that. And that's you have to stay sharp on that. And, it's a little like being an athlete, you know, in the off season, athletes practice, they work out, they don't flip off and go to the beach and, you know, and do nothing, because then when the season comes back around, they have to be right up, you know, in tip top shape. And, we don't know when the off season is going to be done, you know,
that's
but,
true.
You know, it could be tomorrow. And when if the phone rings, I want to be ready. So that's what I'm doing. I trying to keep my instrument, as they say, in shape.
Nothing wrong with that. Now, one of the things that I do when I prepare for interviews is I try to find out a lot of information as much as I can that's available on the internet. Now, one of the interesting things I found that you have an aunt named Ezel Poole that was an actress. You want to share a little bit about her?
Ezel Poole. And Ezel passed in 1987, I think. So she's been gone for quite a while. But she was a working actress for the better part of 40 or 50 years.
Amazing.
She started in silent films. She was older, but she started in silent films in we think in about 1920. And was discovered by a man named Harold Lloyd. Your listeners may need to look him up, but he was a contemporary of Charlie Chapman, Chaplin and Buster Keaton and those guys, and made tons of silent films. And Ezel was in a lot of those films uncredited. But she lived in Hollywood for most of her life. My family's from Arkansas originally, so she was an Arkansas farm girl that went to Hollywood, and she would sometimes come back to Arkansas, kind of with her tail between her legs, you know,
poor thing,
and work on the farm for my grandfather, you know, until she would get a telegram, and then she'd be off to New York, and she toured in Europe and worked with some very big stars, Elizabeth Taylor and Hudson. And I mean, it's amazing. I was telling you earlier the story. She was a stereotypical Hollywood star. She married and divorced many times. And at one point, in the middle 40s, she was married to a Greek man. Don't ask me his name. I couldn't pronounce it. I can remember it. Who had a restaurant in downtown Hollywood, somewhere on Hollywood Boulevard. And at one point, a man walked up to her, a client whose name was Sheldon Leonard. You'll have to look that name up. And said, "Izal, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. He's got some things going on. You may not be interested in it. It's not the stage. It's certainly not the big screen. It's kind of the small screen. But I just want you to talk to him." Well, the man was Milton Berle, and she was on the original Milton Berle show for a while. And so she was literally right there when it started. And in fact, in June, I took a trip out to Hollywood. And doing some sightseeing and went to the last house that she owned. Well, you can see the Hollywood sign from her house. So she was literally right there. She did episodes of Red Skelton. She was big friends with Jonathan Winters and Knox and Earl and that whole crew. And we would get when I was a kid, we would get a postcard from her. Saying, "Oh, I'm going to be on Red Skelton this date, you know, and be sure to watch." And we turn on our black and white TV at the time. There's, you know, Dad would say, "Well, yeah, that's your Aunt Isa." So she was real pistol. I need to sit down and write out everything that I know about her. She was never a star. She was never a star. She was never even a supporting actor. She always had a bit part. But she made a living, made a pretty good living.
Nothing wrong with that.
And the other thing was that, in 1945, she was in her 40s. And, women have trouble, these days being in their 40s. I mean, 40 is kind of the new 25 now. But, in those days at 40, you're done. But she worked more consistently and probably made more money from the time that she was 65 until she retired at age 45. Till she retired in the early 70s.
That's amazing.
So, that could be done.
Yeah. And to tell the listeners that's listening to this episode, you shared some pictures with me and she was an amazing looking lady. And, I like the ones that had Milton Berle in it and Jonathan Winters with her. That is just right there. That's very thoughtful of you doing that. To me, that's iconic. That's history. I've never really seen anything like that, especially from somebody that was related. So I appreciate you sharing that with me. I consider that a treasure. But man, that is just cool. I mean, she seemed like she really had fun doing what she did. And I know I jotted a few things down. She was in The Twilight Zone, My Three Sons, Green Acres. She was in those episodes. So that's I used to watch all those as a kid.
She played the original mother of all of her homes in Green Acres. But there was another weird story about her. She was a great screamer, and her scream can be heard on a lot of the horror pictures in the 40s and 50s. And to develop that scream, she would walk outside and just scream, and her neighbors, would call the police or run to find out what's going on over there. No, I'm just screaming. Right.
Speaking of scream, I think I actually have her scream. Hold on one second. What? Isn't that pretty cool?
That's it,
I love using those sound effects, but it's weird how you just said scream and I just had it right there. I'm crazy like that. Well, we're going to go ahead and take our final commercial break. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turfs Up Radio.
This is Lou Blacksale from Liars of Ur, and you are listening to Turfs Up Radio. TurfsUpRadio.com, baby. Wow.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Jose Show on Turfs Up Radio. Tonight, we're talking with actor James Poole. It's really been fun talking to you tonight and sharing a bit of history with your aunt and then what you do for a living. I really do appreciate that. Now, if you have any final thoughts that you would like to share, you know, of anybody that wants to become an actor or anything like that, and if you have any social medias you like to share, you have the platform.
You can find me on Facebook. I don't know the www, but just James Pool, and as well as it's on IMTV. You have my reel there and some photographs on Facebook. There is one thing, and I hate to end this. We've had so much.
That's fine. Had
so much, but kind of a little bit of a downer. But you know, Pensacola is a Navy town, and so things that happened in the Navy affect us. It's really a very small town. A week or so ago, there was a helicopter crash, a Navy helicopter crash, off the coast of California, off of San Diego, and all five crew members were killed. Well, as it happens, the pilot was the son of a high school buddy of mine that grew up just a few blocks from me. So those of you, you know, if you're praying, folks, you know, just his name was Paul Fridley, and 29, had the, you know, his whole life in front of him. So just keep him in your thoughts, and his parents. He has a young wife. I don't know if he has any kids, but. That affects us here. It's a small community, and it's a very small world. You know, I've had that on my mind the last several days since I found about that. But
well, I appreciate that, sharing that.
You know, I so appreciate your asking me to do this. It's the first podcast I've been.
Really? All right, man.
I'm no longer a podcast virgin.
That's it. I was just going to say that you took the words out of my mouth. That is actually, we got something for you. Hold on, let me find it. Where's it at?
Thank you.
So that's pretty cool. No, I appreciate you bringing that up about those the men that passed away in the helicopter crash. You know, we have to give credit to the men and women in the military and all the branches, you know, thank them for their service, past, present, and future. You know, I fully support the military because, you know, they do stuff that I would be scared to do. They go into battle. They go into harm's way. We've had thousands upon thousands die in World War I, World War II, the Desert Storm. And, you know, we need to reflect and remember those. No matter what they do, they're still in the military. If they're here in the United States and they pass away because of helicopter crashes or anything like that, we still have to remember them because, you know, they're in it to protect us from any foreign or domestic terrorism. And, you know, you got to give them credit. My dad was in the military. You know, so I appreciate you bringing that up. You know, a lot of times we don't give them credit when credit's due. And, you know, that's great that you did that to support them, and prayers to
you. To paraphrase a line from Top Gun, you know, you have to remember this thing that these men and women do out there. It's dangerous.
Yes, it is.
Plain old dangerous.
I agree. So if anybody would like to get a hold of me, The Jose Show, you can go to Facebook and do a search for The Jose Show. I have a page and a group, and on Twitter, I am at Jose Roldan Jr. That's at JOSEROLDANJR. And on Instagram, I am The Jose Roldan. That's JOSEROLDAN. Tonight, we were talking with James Poole. He is an actor, and check out his movies coming out soon, Zombies and Interfere, The Next Wave. And I thank you, sir, for being on The Jose Show.
Thank you, Jose.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to The Jose Show. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And see you next time on The Jose Show.